shug, 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 shug.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff Podcast. I'm your host, Blake.
And I'm Guy.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We do drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when playing children's card games. In the last episode, we covered the Innistrad Crimson Vow Commanders that just came out. And in this episode, we are going to be finishing up the cards that can be in the 99, or the main deck. And so we're going to be going in Wooburg order, white, blue, black, red, green, colorless, and multicolor. And yeah, let's just wrap this up. We are also going to be discussing maybe one or two cards from the Commander precons that came in conjunction with the main set. But there's not too many that we're going to talk about. That's just kind of by our own choice. This is our podcast. We get to do what we want.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we actually do have quite a few white cards to talk about. So, Guy, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So, first we got By Invitation Only, 3 white-white, sorcery, choose number between 0 and 13. Each player sacrifices that many creatures. So, we just got Vanquished the Horde in Midnight Hunt, and we were already kind of talking about how that's a pretty good white board wipe. Like, they come and they go, but like, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got Invitation Only, which is like, oh, okay, like, this is even kind of getting back up there with all those other ones, because it's like, first, you can get around indestructibility, so it does get around like a couple things, and two, you can kind of pick and choose what you need to keep, but also then, like, kind of force your opponents to, like, get rid of stuff that they need. Like, you know, if you're like, yeah, I can get rid of, you know, just some of these, like, useless, like, 1/1 white creatures that white's really good at making, but my opponents then have to give up some of their, like, actually good creature cards that their deck depends on, like, then you're talking.
This seems particularly amazing in sacrifice strategies, which tend to be like in at least white and black. So, you know, it's not like it's a very specific type of board wipe. A lot of, like, you know, Wrath of God and the one that you just mentioned are like, they're very splashable, but this one, if you're going to put it in a deck, it's probably going to be more purposeful. And Guy, maybe you can answer this. We just did the last episode, so I'm having a bit of drink in me. It says choose a number between 0 and 13. Can you choose 0? There are so many magic cards that say blah 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 blah, X can't be 0. Do you know if you can say 0? What's the point of this card if you can?
I feel like part of the reason is, like, there are some cards in there where I feel like you can then kind of control it. So, like, if you could control your opponent's ability to choose something and you want to, like, essentially counter it by choosing 0, you could then make the choice to do 0 instead. Like, who gets control of a spell, which is often a red thing, I think. Like, so it's just kind of interesting to, like, that. So I guess, like, maybe that's a good reason, like, just being able to have the option.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really care that much.
Between just 0 and 13 makes me suggest that you can't even pick 13 either, though.
That was gonna be my follow-up question.
Because then it's, but, like, why wouldn't you be able to pick 13? Because, like, I feel like 13 is such a big theme in Innistrad. Like, you should be able to pick 13. You do 13 points of damage with Blasphemous Sack. There's the there's that
just
one.
Just a Decaphile.
Yep.
Just get Decaphobia.
Yep, that one.
Yeah, 13. Yeah, 13 is definitely, like, the number for this set. I don't know. Alright, next up, we've got Sigarda's Summons. Yeah, Sigarda's back. For white-white, she's kind of like the hero of this set, I think, which is not...
Kind of.
I mean, she's the only one left. She's, like, the only heroic character left.
I know she played a big part in the first story. I don't know if she played as big a part in this one.
Yeah, I think she, like, interrupted the wedding. I don't know. I don't read the lore. Anyways, it's a 6-mana enchantment that says creatures you control with +1/+1 counters on them have base power and toughness, 4/4, have flying, and are angels in addition to their other types. So, basically, this is a great win con for +1/+1 counter decks with white and their color identity. And because basically, like, alright, you're doing your +1/+1 counter things, you're putting +1/+1 counters on your stuff, then late game you slam this, and then all of a sudden your creatures are turning into at least like 4/4 base power and toughness, and again, however many +1/+1 counters they have, they're now getting buffed by that. So you're at least making 5/5 flying angels, and so then you just like beat face. And so, yeah, it's just like another win con. It's great to where, like, Sigarda's summons does not have to be around to see the +1/+1 counters being put on things, in contrast to, like, Simic Ascendancy, which is also a +1/+1 counters win con, but Simic Ascendancy has to be around to see all those counters being put on stuff. You can also compare it to, like, Champion of Lampholt, which is also another +1/+1 counter win con. It's sort of the same situation. This card, on another level, kind of reminds me of Divine Visitation, where like you're kind of making 5/5 flying angels to just beat face in and win. And if your meta is slow enough for that to be a viable win con, then great. Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah.
Actually, can I talk about this next card too? I'm sorry. I'm selfish.
Oh, no, go for it.
All right. Hallowed Haunting, that's the words. 2 white-white enchantment. As long as you control 7 or more enchantments, creatures you control have flying and vigilance. Okay, that seems pretty nice. Whenever you cast an enchantment spell, create a white spirit cleric creature token with this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of spirits you control. So that's kind of interesting as well. This is kind of like a win con for certain Enchantress decks. Not every Enchantress deck is going to want this, but some of them will, especially if they're ones that are using cards like Sigil of the Empty Throne or Starfield of Nyx, where you're kind of trying to create a token beatdown army with your enchantments. This sort of slots into that already pre-existing strategy. There are differences like Sigil of the Empty Throne, it's hard line, simple, it's like 4/4s, but this, it's easier to cast because it's less mana, but it has certain downsides where the creatures at first are very small and you really need to get going to make them bigger than 4/4, but once you do, like, they can in theory get really big because enchantress can just play a shit ton of enchantments and just make giant spirits with high power and toughness. But I mean, I like it because I fucking love enchantments, but it's whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, you could even then be like pumping some of your spirits with like auras and stuff. It just doesn't have to be like only auras, or it doesn't just have
only
to be
enchants,
right? Like, it could be auras too.
Sure.
Like pump your big army. Like, I feel like, yeah, it's not going to be that hard to like meet the 7 or more condition. And then from there, you're just going to be able to like... I think this is another good example of like, once you play this card, it's like, oh, okay, someone take care of that, please. Because like, yeah, I feel like this is one of the... Because in the right deck, like, this totally is one of those things where it's like, yeah, someone needs to take care of that.
Hey guy, do you want me to like play my enchantments and then beat you to death with a bunch of spirits?
I dare you to like find a card to take out in your Sigarda deck for this. Like,
I mean, if it's to kill you with spirits, I might just have to do it.
Oh, that'd be awful. Like, all right, Cemetery Protector, 2 white white creature human soldier. This is part of a mythic cycle of cemetery creatures, actually. This is the white one. so it has flash. When it enters the battlefield, exile a card from a graveyard. So that's the thing they all share in common. It's kind of like the adversary cycle from Crimson Vow. This is a cemetery cycle. Whenever you play a land or cast a spell, if it shares a card type with the exile card, create a 1/1 white human creature token. And it's a 3/4. This is okay. I would like this a lot more whenever an opponent played a land or cast a spell if it shares the same type, which is what some of these others say. Just because I feel like that makes it a little more white in the sense of, like, you're creating this sense of being able to catch up in other resources that isn't just specifically like card draw or mana. You're gonna almost kind of be taxing your opponents in a way. Like, oh yeah, play a land. Oh, I'm going to get to create a token. And I didn't have to do anything. So I think I'd like it a lot more that way, but that's not what this card does, unfortunately.
True. This one's kind of tough because there aren't very many. Okay, so assuming it's a land, there aren't really many like landfall strategies
in mono white.
In mono white, or that even have white in their color identity. The only one I can think of is like Omnath, Locus of Creation, that four color Omnath. And even then, mm-hmm. I don't think most of those are going to want this card. But I still wanted to talk about this card in terms of the fact that if you exile the right type of card and create a whole bunch of 1/1 creature tokens, I feel like the longer I've played Commander, I've seen cards that make creature tokens reliably, like God Eternal Aketra, or Monastery Mentor, Murmuring Mystic, Sedge Moor Witch, Ajani's Chosen, Talrand, Young Pyromancer. You don't always see them, but when you do, they're often very purposely put in very specific decks, and they do a lot of fucking work. And so I don't expect to see this card very much, but maybe like the one or two times that I do, it's going to be in a very purposely put in a deck, and it's going to make a bunch of creature tokens, and it's going to abuse those creature tokens into some other form of value, whatever it may be, and it's going to be strong. I don't know what that is, but I can see that happening in the future.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I think, you know, also kind of makes this stand out a little more than some of those cards is also it is graveyard hate, because it's exile a card from a graveyard. So it could be you're getting rid of a card from a opponent's key like strategy too. Like, for instance, if you know, they were trying to set up Underworld Breach or whatever.
And it's like trying flash. To like
loop. Yeah. So like you can flash this into response to like stop that. Like that feels pretty good too. It's almost like Endurance, I think, the green elemental we just got in a way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Because you're probably really just worried about one card.
True. You know,
most of the time.
Yeah, this next card, I'm very interested in the design, and I think you are too. It's Welcoming Vampire, 2 and a white, creature vampire 2/3 with flying. Whenever one or more other creatures with power 2 or less enter the battlefield under your control, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's mono white card draw. It's slightly different, but it's pretty similar to like Mentor of the Meek in terms of like power 2 or less entering the battlefield. You're drawing cards. This one, you don't have to pay any mana into it, but it is limited to the fact that it only triggers once each turn, whereas Mentor of the Meek is not. But yeah, this is very emblematic of Motsi's been saying, like, we've heard the player base, we are trying to give white more card draw. And, you know, this isn't as strong as Esper Sentinel, but, you know, I'm playing the long game here. Like, play enough years, I'm sure mono white's gonna get there. They did it with red. No, like, nobody complains about mono red anymore. You notice that? And I'm hoping that in, like, maybe 2 or 3 years, no one's gonna be complaining about mono white anymore. God, I hope so. They'll just start complaining about another color.
In some fashion, I suppose.
I can dream.
Yeah, I guess it was just so clear of a disadvantage that Fauna White had. That, like, once, you know, if blue becomes the worst mono color, then, like, it's not going to be, like, nearly as bad as how it was for, like, white and red at a certain point.
One last thing, circling back to this card specifically, is I want to make the most of this card. The restriction of it is the fact that it says the ability triggers only once each turn, so then it's like, alright, how do we get multiple triggers? Alright, let's just do good white creatures with power two or less and have, like, flash. And there's not really many of them. There's pretty much Aven Mind Sensor, Containment Priest, Hushwing Griff, Village Bell Ringer, and if you really want to stretch the definition of good, you can include, like, White Mane Lion and Selfless Squire, but then, like, that's it, dude. There are not very many, so I'm just hoping we get more, slash we get other cards besides Welcoming Vampire that give you good card draw. Like, I don't need anything better than Esper Sentinel, but, like, I need cards close to Esper Sentinel's power level to draw cards just over the next few years. WotC, please.
Yeah, so I feel like this is one to pick up now. May not be as relevant, but could definitely become more relevant in the future. Like, it has room to grow.
I feel like we're going to get better stuff in the future. Odds are.
We'll see.
Yeah, WotC always plays it pretty tame, and then it's like, alright, that was fine. Alright, let's up it up a little bit. And like, oh, that was fine? Okay, let's up it up a little bit. We're going to move into blue now.
Yep, and we have Necro Duality. 3 blue enchantment. Whenever a non-token zombie enters the battlefield under your control, create a token that's a copy of that creature. Guess what? If you're playing a zombie deck, you're playing this card. Like, this is just an instant staple in any zombie deck.
Pretty much. It's like Rooftop Storm, zombie tribal enchantment staple.
That and, like, there's not as many legendary zombies as there are vampires. So you probably do want to try and, like, try to incorporate, like, some of that Sakashima type effects, you know, like where legend doesn't matter, or mirror gallery, just so, because like zombies often pump up each other, and if you're just going to be pumping up a bunch of zombies with a bunch of lords and things like that, like, you're going to want to be able to just be able to create a bunch of copies pretty easily. I feel like you make this into a zombie copy deck. That actually sounds kind of cool.
Ooh, this next one I am really excited about. It's Big Crab.
That's not its name.
In my heart, it's called Big Crab. It is actually called Hullbreaker Horror. 5 blue creature, Kraken Horror. It's a 7/8. So 7 mana, 7/8. It's got flash, and it's uncounterable, basically. Whenever you cast a spell, choose up to one. You get two options. Return target spell you don't control to its owner's hand, or return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So you can either, like, bounce stuff on the stack, or you can bounce stuff on the field every time you cast a spell, which I don't know if you've checked, but people like to cast spells in Commander a lot. So you're just going to be bouncing fucking everything if you can make this thing land, which odds are, because it has flash and is uncounterable, it's probably going to fucking land on the field. So this thing is just, like, fucking amazing. It's the closest comparison is, like, Tidespout Tyrant, which is different in that, like, I think Tidespout Tyrant can bounce lands, whereas this one can't. But Tidespout Tyrant can't interact with things on the stack. It's not uncounterable. It doesn't have flash. There are important differences. The CDH community has been talking about this crab and Tidespout Tyrant for polymorph decks. And there's been a little bit of, like, internal, like, do you just play one? Do you just play both? Do you just play the crab? And then I don't know what the answer is, because I don't identify as a CDH player. They can figure that out. But regardless, Big Crab, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, to Blake's point, like, you wouldn't think this would necessarily make the CDH crowd, but, like, they're talking about it, and it's like, oh, shit, like, this is a big boy. Like, normally you don't kind of talk about those kind of things, so I don't know.
Yeah, I love it.
I think recommendation is to, like, tap it, cast it on the end step going into your turn, on your opponent's end step into your turn. Because then, like, if you get to untap with this thing, and then you can just start kind of, like, bouncing tons of stuff. Like, your cantrips can just become, like, almost counterspells. It's like, oh, let me get rid of the Kraken crab thing is like, I'm going to spend like 8 mana or whatever, 7 mana to Cyclonic Rift Overload. Oh, I'll just cast Brainstorm, like bounce your spell back to your hand. Like, whoops. That's one blue mana.
Yeah, that is a good point where it gets around uncounterable because you're not technically countering it, you're just returning it to their hand and it just fizzles. It's sort of like Venser, Shaper, Savant, I believe. And if you've ever played against like someone who just repeatedly like uses Venser, it's like, oh, that's pretty oppressive. So I can envision this being pretty strong in the right deck.
Right, like you almost kind of want this pseudo cross between like really strong like 4 to 5 mana spells and then also like low cantrips like Brainstorm and things like that, where you know, you can draw cards, but also then, like, just use them as in response to be like, yeah, I'm casting this in response to, like, do something, but more importantly, return the spell to your hand, you know?
Yeah. I will say, like, when I look at this set as a whole, and we'll talk about the set as a whole at the end of the episode, but other people have just been like, oh, vampire, I'm so horny. And I'm just like, big crab, big frog, big slug, love it.
Yeah, you like the nature stuff more.
Yeah, you can tell what my personality is. All right, we're going to move on to black. And we only have one card in this category, but that's because it's the only one worth talking about.
I mean, that's being a little generous, too, because I honestly don't even think this card's, you know, anything to write home about that.
I've seen people talking about it, and I want to set the record straight. That's why we're talking about it.
Okay, well, Demonic Bargain, 3 and a black. Exile the top 13 cards of your library. 2 and a black. Exile the top 13 cards of your library, then search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle. This is just part of extravagance and magic. is it part of extravagance, or...
I think it's part of desires.
Actually, I think they both kind of do a very similar thing. I think you're right. Extravagance is the one that...
Desires banishes 10 cards from the top of your deck, face down, draw 2.
Okay, so it's more like Desires, but Extravagance also does it where it's like banish 3 or 6 cards from your extra deck. So they both banish cards, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, so I had to look up Pot of Extravagance, and this is funny. And it was just like, oh, here, come buy it on this proxy. Like, it calls out it's a proxy. And the reviews are, these are fake. 1 star. It's like, no shit. Like, it's very explicit in... proxy card. Like, dude, I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh! For that long, and I know, like, Pot of Extravagance isn't, like, a dollar.
Yeah, I don't want to get into, like, the mess of buying proxies. I don't want to get into that discussion.
Yeah, well, sorry. That's just my tangent. Demonic Bargain. Not a good card, in my opinion. What do you think, Blake?
But, Guy, what are you talking about? For 3 mana at sorcery speed... Like, I can tutor any card to my hand, but all I gotta do is exile the top 13 cards of my deck, and we're a 100-card singleton.
I'd honestly be more okay with it if it was instant speed. If it was instant speed, I'd be like, okay, that's actually pretty good. No.
Yeah, I think the most helpful way to think about this card, because I've seen a lot of people being like, yeah, like, this is just a black staple. It's like, okay, let's compare it to Grim Tutor. Which is essentially the same thing. Essentially. It's 3 mana, sorcery, searches from deck to hand, any card, you just lose some life, which you don't care about because we're 40 life, starting life total in Commander. And like that's much less bad than having to exile the top 13 cards. It's like, true, we are 100-card singleton, but there's a good chance you're going to like exile something that you wanted. And I can tell you, as a former mill player, like, your opponents and you will get really sad about seeing all the stuff like you exile. Like, I see people talking about how this is like Tainted Pact or Demonic Consultation, and that is just buck wild, not good card analysis to compare it to.
Yeah, no way.
I think this card is great if you're much more casual and you don't mind playing like the 3-mana or 4-mana black tutors. Or if you just don't have the budget to buy, like, you know, Demonic Tutor and Vampiric Tutor, which are pretty pricey cards, to be honest. So, like, at the end of the day, if I see someone playing this, I'm gonna assume they just, like, don't have the money, or they just want to play very casually, and either of those is perfectly fine. And also, it's Commander, you can play whatever the hell you want, so, like, you can play this if you really want to. I'm just saying, it's not as powerful as I've been hearing a lot of people speculate and say.
The art is super cool, though.
Oh, hell yeah. Love it.
And actually, it has the same artist as this next card, which is Change of Fortune, which is 3 and a red, and it's a sorcery, so you might be thinking, does this guy even care? But no, it's discard your hand and draw a card for each card you've discarded this turn, which is wild, because it's almost like Underworld Breach, but it's even better. Oh, sorry, it's almost like Wheel of Fortune, but it's even better.
I was about to say, boy, that is not an accurate statement.
Yeah. Okay. But if you pair this with Underworld Breach, like, oh my goodness. So, yeah, so you essentially just are able to, like, draw 30 cards with this after 2 times, like, casting it. Because you will, let's say you play, you have a hand of 7, including this, you cast this, you then get to draw 6 because you discarded your hand size 6, so you draw 6 cards, cast it again, you then draw 12 cards, and then you would draw 18, but by then that's now 30, because also you still have access to all these cards in your graveyard with the ability for Underworld Breach. So you want these cards kind of as a way of being able, like, this recursion from the deck in this one combo just makes it, like, grow your hand size, like, exponentially, like, way quicker. And then the other thing I was going to say is, like, even also pairing this with, like, cards like Burgi, where you discard your hand and draw, like, 4 cards, and then, you know, you draw, quote-unquote, like, 14 off the horn, then you can just kind of, like, pop off. Like, this is a CEDH staple. Like, this card's nuts.
I don't know about that, but it is very strong. Yeah, it's just like, it's an extender, it's an enabler, whatever you want to call it. It's not necessarily the first card you want to cast on your turn. It's like, yeah, maybe, as you were saying, like, do a wheel or two and then cast this and then profit. Ooh. This just has such a high ceiling in, like, all kinds of decks, like Anji Falconwrath decks, where you're just doing a whole bunch of discard, and then, like, at the end, you do Change of Fortune. Alright, let's do even more discard. Let's extend my plays here. Or you could do, like, Lowest God, where you do Wheel, Wheel, Change of Fortune, Wheel, 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 Wheel. And then there's also other things, like Gavi Nestwarden, like cycling. That counts as discarding cards. So you could do, like, a bunch of cycling shit, then Change of Fortune, refill your hand, do more cycling shit. It's just, like, this is a strong card.
Yeah, I mean, cycle for sure, because that's the whole point of the mechanic. Discard a card, draw a card, so it's like replacing a card. But that's going to then be like 2 cards for one down the line if you then cast Change of Fortune. Yeah, and it's one-sided, which I think we kind of overlooked a little bit, because you often see a lot of these, like, wheels and red end up being for, like, everyone. This is just you, which I think is also great, because then it doesn't allow your opponents to draw into, like, counterspells or something. Like, you just have to hope that they don't have one in hand, and then if they don't, like, you can kind of start going off. Which is how I think is the best way to use this card.
It also kind of reminds me of, like, Shadow of the Grave and Bag of Holding in certain decks, where it's just, like, these types of cards can just, like, draw you so many cards in the right deck, and it's, like, fucking bananas. I can easily see myself losing to someone who's just doing their strategy and cast Change of Fortune and draw, like, 30 cards and then do more bullshit and I just lose. Strong card. Alright, so next up we got Cemetery Gatekeeper. It is 1 and a red creature vampire, 2/1 with first strike. When it enters the battlefield, exile a card from a graveyard. So remember, it's part of that cemetery cycle, like the white one we talked about earlier. So this one enters, exiles a card from a graveyard. When a player plays a land or casts a spell, if it shares a card type with the exiled card, it deals 2 damage to that player. Guy, you're pretty high on this card. Talk about it.
Oh, I'm pretty high, all right. Yeah, I actually think, and we'll get into this later, but I think that this is the best card in the cemetery cycle, because we didn't even talk about the blue one, which I'll just give you a quick recap.
It's not even worth talking about.
Right. It basically allows you to cast a card off the top of your library for free if it shares a card type with the card it exiled, which is, like, it's fine, but, like, it's kind of hard to, like, line that up always. So you'd want to blink it a lot. You have to, like, build around it or abuse it. It's good in a spirit deck, that's what I'll say.
Yeah, spirits, here we go. Ready to kill guy.
Yeah. And then the black one is just basically like a big beefy zombie that then you could use at another point in time to like try and kill something else off, but like it's a little I don't know. Like there are more efficient ways of killing creatures in black. Let's just say that. So now we get to Cemetery Gatekeeper, who can become kind of like a stacks piece. It's interesting because you probably want to exile something that's a land. That's probably the best bet. And you will get to be able to like ding everyone for 2 the first time they play a land. It's unfortunately not going to just keep going on like the decks that are like landfalling and just playing a bunch of lands per turn. This is whenever a player plays the land, not whenever like a land enters the battlefield. But it's still one of those ones where, like, I don't know. I'm definitely going to put this in purpose. I think it makes the cut. This is the kind of card that I wanted from Bloodthirsty Adversary. The 2 mana. this is a card. So, yeah. But just in, like, general, I think red decks, you know, they, like white, don't have a good way of, like, being able to create a ton of mana, so they can have some ways of like kind of being punishing for those who are out tempoing them.
Yeah, exile land, somewhat punish landfall decks, or just green ramp decks. Do an instant or sorcery, punish like spellslinger, stormy sort of decks. To get rid of a creature, like stop a lot of creature centric decks. Choose enchantment, just say fuck you, Blake. Do artifacts, just stop any artifact centric deck. Like all of those types of decks are pretty popular. It's just whether like this can get the type of card in the graveyard early enough to like stop those strategies from like storming off in their own way.
I think that this almost becomes one of the best hate bearers around, because you know, you do have some really good hate bearers that are kind of, like, generic, but this one is so adaptable to, like, whatever meta you need, because it is kind of like, oh, I can choose whenever I want, and I don't have to really sacrifice a specific slot to be something. This can be almost everything for me to, like, ruin my opponents, because, like, yeah, if I do have the one guy who plays too many artifacts, like, I can choose artifacts, or then if, like, you know, we switch decks, and then somebody else is playing, like, their creature heavy deck, it's like, oh, okay, well then I can just do the creatures, because you can exile a card from anyone's graveyard and then choose, but really have it affect some other guy, like, you know, if I exile land from Blake's graveyard and then, you know, Park's playing 10 lands a turn, okay, that's gonna be a lot more effective against him than it was gonna be anyone else. Nope.
Yeah, that was going to be my final note to say, where I feel like that's probably the baseline of this card, where it's probably going to be hitting lands, because so many, at least the kind of pods I play in, a lot of people have fetch lands, and so there's almost guaranteed when you cast this on, like, turn 1 or 2, depending how quick you get this out, like, that's probably a good, it's the highest likelihood of the kind of card type that you'll hit. And at the very worst, it's kind of like a Zozu the Punisher sort of type of effect, right?
Yeah, it's just the one thing, again, it's whenever a player plays a land, it's not whenever a land enters the battlefield, so you only get 1 damage off of the fetch lands, but at least you're still going to have a lot of opportunities to exile fetch lands from graveyards because those are becoming so prevalent now, especially with, like, reprints and everything. Like, people are starting to play more and more of these, like, fetchable lands. Not even, like, you know, the best fetch lands. Evolving Wild is out there. Myriad Landscapes out there. Prismatic Vista. Fabled Passage.
Mana Form Hellkite. 2 and red. Creature Dragon 4/4 with flying. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create an XX red dragon illusion creature token with flying and haste, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast that spell. Exile that token at the beginning of the next end step. So you're casting a whole bunch of non-creature spells, and then you're getting temporary creature tokens that are as big as whatever their mana values were, and you swing in with them, and you lose them at the end of your turn. So it's basically converting your non-creature spells into additional damage during the combat phase.
Yeah, totally. Like, I was kind of... So in, you know, Magic Christmas Land, which it really was this set for me, like, this card becomes a, you know, a creature creating more tokens for cards I cast non-creature spells, which is, like, everything but creatures, so, like, that's quite a lot. That just then makes Purphoros trigger for every dragon that enters the battlefield, and then... You know, so everything I do then makes my opponents lose 2 life. And then, on top of that, like, you have creatures in the air that can then, like, swing in and hit people. So, like, to me, this is, like, one of my favorite cards in the set. This is tough for me.
I'm glad you finally got something for your Purphoros deck, because I feel like it's been a lot of whiffs for, like, almost a year.
Kaldheim was, I think, our last big true victory, because we got Tybalt's Trickery, at least, and Burgee. But yeah, I can't really think of anything else too recent that I was like, oh gosh, this is the best. Like, Burn Down the House was okay, but like, it's, you know, like, these 3 cards make up for all the ass I've eaten these last, like, 6 months.
Well said there. Alright, so...
Alright.
We're gonna move on to green.
Alright, so we're going Cemetery Prowler, so... Last color, Cemetery Prowler. This is the last card of the cemetery cycle, so, you know, white, red, and green were the most notable ones to talk about. It's a creature wolf, vigilance. Whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, exile a card from a graveyard. There you go. Spells you cast cost 1 less to cast for each card they share with cards exiled with Cemetery Prowler. Which, okay, that's not so bad. I think the tough part here, you can exile land, I guess, but, you know, that's not going to do anything, because lands don't cost you mana. Whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, spells you cast cost 1 less to cast for each card type they share with cards exiled with that. So, you could potentially be getting, like, 2 or 3 mana off with the same type of card, because, like, I think if you just keep exiling, like, the same card, like, if you... exile an instant or a sorcery, or if you, like, do instants, only instants, like, if you get 3, like, all your instants then become 3 less? Am I thinking of that correctly? No, wait, no, I'm wrong. Each card type they share with cards, so each card type.
Yeah, so it's up each...
It's not each card exiled, okay, it's each card type.
Yeah, so, like, in theory, you could make all of your stuff cost 1 less, but it's not like you can make all your creatures cost, like, 7 less.
Right, okay, that makes sense. Okay, that's not as broken as I thought. So yeah, like, this one's fine to, like, you know, it's in green's realm of things to, like, you know, make stuff cheaper, or, like, be able to get you more mana, but it's only going to be able to reduce it by 1 at best sometimes, so, like, this, it's fine. Like, It's in the middle of the pack for the cemetery cycle for me. It's worth talking about enough.
It reminds me of Cloud Key, where, like, you basically choose what kind of card type you want to cost 1 less. Needless to say, it's not always going to be live like Cloud Key. And, like, this is ETB or attack, so, like, you can make all of your creatures and artifacts and enchantments and instants and sorceries and planeswalkers cost 1 less, in theory. Yeah, I'm not quite sure which one this is probably going to lean towards. I have a feeling it's going to be like creatures costing one less. That's the vibe I get as a green creature with vigilance. But who knows? Like, it is fairly open-ended. You can kind of do whatever you want with it. Play it against me. Kill me with it. Do it.
Yeah.
Oh god, this next card.
Yeah, people are freaking out about this card.
People lost their fucking shit. I'm just like, why? I know why. But I shouldn't be surprised anymore. But it just makes me laugh and kind of roll my eyes. All right, it is Cultivator Colossus. 4 green. For a star creature plant beast. So it's this, like, 7-mana fucking giant green thing. And it has trample, and its power toughness is equal to the number of lands you control. When it enters the battlefield, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. If you do, draw a card and repeat this process. So, it's just a big dumb green creature that synergizes with lands. You know, you get a whole bunch of lands out. This is a really large creature with trample. Booyah. And the thing that people were freaking out about was the fact that the last three words where it said repeat this process, where, like, you could play this, dump your hand of, like, say, like, 5 lands, and then, like, draw, like, 5 cards, and, like, if any of those cards were lands, then you could do it again and again. People were just like, oh my god, you could just, like, churn through your entire deck. Oh my god, and it's so huge, and it's green, therefore I'm scared and intimidated. And then people were like, oh my god, this combos with Abundance, a 4-mana enchantment from way back. And, like, you can just put all your lands into play tapped, and oh my god, what if you have Amulet of Vigor? Then they're untapped, then all of your, like, libraries in your hand, and oh my god. And I was just like, alright, you're very much casual players, this is not... And people were like, oh my god, you can, like, you can reanimate this, this is such a strong reanimation target. And I'm just like, okay, this card is strong in casual. It is not, like, as OP as a lot of you are freaking out about. Like, it reminds me very much of, like, old Gnawbone back in, like, the Adventures in the Forgotten Realm D&D set, where, like, people are like, oh my god, this is so strong of a green creature, I'm so mad. And then, to a lesser extent, it's like Nyxbloom Ancient, and people were like, oh my god, such a strong green creature that gives me mana, please ban on rules committee, I'm so scared. And, like, this is the same sort of category. Do you agree or disagree?
Like, I agree that your comparison is correct, but I disagree with everyone else even thinking, like, yeah, I even thought, like, old Gnawbone and Nyxbloom Ancient were a lot stronger than this card.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think that this one's worth comparing to those guys. Like, I feel like if you drop Nyxbloom Ancient, it should be kind of like, all right, game's pretty much over if you don't respond by next turn. Sorry, I'm going to have, like, 20 million mana. So,
yeah, it's just one of those things where people freak out, and, like, I agree, where it's not as powerful as those two other examples I gave, but people were just, like, so vocal online, and I doubt I'll ever really see it in play, maybe once or twice, in a landfall deck. But landfall decks have so many good choices at this point, even though we are 100-card singleton, that it's like, am I ever going to see this? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to the last... Oh, no, we got 2 more green cards.
Yeah, we got 2 more green cards. Can I say something before we read these 2 cards?
Well, 1 card, front and back, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I almost want to read these, like, last 2 cards. Like these last 2 cards are, like, creatures that have daybound, nightbound, so they're, like, human on one half, they're werewolf in another. And basically, one side is really strong, and the other is useless. And I've seen people talk about them, and they're like, oh my god, this is so strong, this is gonna do this in this deck, and this in that deck. And I think people forget, like, unless you're in Werewolf Tribal, you're not gonna have consistent control over the Daybound Nightbound, so half the time these cards are gonna be great, and half the time, it's gonna be shit. Like, unless you're a Werewolf Tribal deck. So, we're gonna read these 2 cards, but just keep in mind that they're not as strong as you think they are, because half the time, they're gonna be shit.
Yeah, so this first one is Howlpack Piper, 3 green, creature, human werewolf. This spell can't be countered. 1 green, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. If it's a wolf or werewolf, untap Howlpack Piper, activate only as a sorcery. So, okay, that's alright in werewolf decks, and being able to maybe cheat in, like, 3 to 4 werewolves, honestly.
Yeah, this is like a werewolf staple. Yeah, totally.
Really? And then, so Daybound, okay, whenever this Wild Song Howler, whenever this creature enters the battlefield or transforms into Wild Song Howler, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them, put it into your hand, put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. That backside is not that great in comparison to the front side. Like, the front side will be able to get you so many more creatures.
Yeah.
I guess, like, the only nice thing that Wild Song here gets to do on maybe, like, a turn. Because, like, I guess the nice thing, too, about this is, like, so actually, okay, wait, now I'm a little higher on this card, and let me tell you why. So Howlpack Piper, you play this, and then you say, like, alright, I'm going to activate this ability 3 times. You get 3 creatures, okay? You cast no spells. They all will then transform into Nightbound. That's pretty good, because then you have Wild Song Howler, and there's a good chance that some player, doesn't have to be you, cast 2 spells during their own turn during the table rotation, you're going to get back to Daybound, be able to repeat this, and then kind of refill your hand with the Wild Song Howler. So actually, again, but this, we're talking werewolf only decks here. Like, this is where you best utilize this. But yeah, I like how this can kind of get around the Daybound and Nightbound thing. Like, I guess now I'm just seeing that, but it's still pretty good.
It's pretty good in the werewolf tribal decks, but a lot of other EDH decks just want the human side, because it's like Elvish Piper, which is a notoriously like powerful effect. But the problem they're going to experience is, like, you cast this, before you get a chance to tap it, it's going to turn into the werewolf, which is going to be relatively useless in their deck. Maybe it'll transform back, and then they'll finally be able to do it, but then it's probably going to transform back again into the useless werewolf side, and then they're going to be frustrated and be like, why did I put this card in the deck? Oh, right, I thought it was a second copy of Elvish Piper, when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Another werewolf staple is Avabruk Caretaker, 4 green-green, creature, human, werewolf with hexproof, 4/4. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put 2+1/+1 counters on another target creature you control, Daybound. And then it flips to Hollow Hedge Huntmaster, 6/6 with hexproof, werewolf. Other permanents you control have hexproof. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put 2+1/+1 counters on each creature you control. So you don't really care about the whole +1/+1 counters thing. Not really. You care about the fact that the werewolf side has hexproof, and it gives your other permanents, not just creatures, but your other permanents, hexproof. It's like an even better privilege position. That's a strong as fuck ability, but again, it's like, unless you're Werewolf Tribal, you're gonna, like, play this human half, which you hate, and then, like, you hope you, like, cross your fingers that it'll transform, which you have no control over, really. And then it'll be like, oh, this is a great hexproof thing, I love it, and then it's gonna transform back, and you're just gonna be like, ah! So, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, both of these, I think, are definitely good for Werewolf decks. I think the Howlpack Piper is probably the one, like, I would put in it beforehand.
I think they're both staples in Werewolf deck, yeah.
I guess, but there's not too many staples in Werewolf decks in general, but it's like, if you had to go from one or the other, but, like, I guess, like, in Werewolf decks, you're not really making cuts like this. It's like, oh, yeah, like, you guys are already, like, top 10 werewolves easy. Like, even probably, like, you two take top 5. So, like, no need to, like, really, like, bowl over whether or not, like, I'm including you. So I guess, like, I don't know why I even said my statement. Like, you're gonna, yeah, you're gonna include both of these.
Alrighty, that's kind of what we got.
Well.
Yeah, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I thought weren't we gonna talk about, like, a few of those Crimson Vow cards?
Okay, yes.
From the pre-cons.
Yes.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, we got, I think, like, 2 or 3 cards from the Crimson Vow Command. Oh, well, actually, there is one really good card that I just remembered about, too. Because it's in the same vein as that one card that the blue-black-white nightmare creature one.
Mm-hmm.
It's Wedding Ring, which is 2 white-white artifact. When Wedding Ring enters the battlefield, if it was cast, target opponent creates a token that's a copy of it. So you get married or whatever. But then, whenever an opponent who controls an artifact named Wedding Ring draws a card, during their turn, you draw a card. Whenever an opponent who controls an artifact named Wedding Ring gains life during their turn, you gain that much life. So you're probably playing this with someone who is going to be drawing a lot of cards, like, pretty reliably. And, yeah, they're going to get to draw cards, too, when you get to draw cards. Like, that's not a huge deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because as a mono-white player, you're not going to be, like, drawing a ton of cards. But, like, I guess, like, this is a good card to pair with Secret Rendezvous, because it's like, hey, we'll each draw 3. Wink, wink. I'm going to draw 6.
Well, Guy, put this in your Avacyn deck, and I'm playing my Sigarda deck. You cast this, and we both get Wedding Rings, and then when I draw, like, 7 cards because of my Enchantress effects, you're also going to draw 7 in mono white, which is, like, fucking good.
Right, and when I gain, like, 15 life somehow, like, you'll gain that life too. Like, it's an equality thing. So, Wedding Ring's a good card to include. There's a couple others. Like, do you want to mention them real quick?
Sure. Like, another one that caught my eye is called Storm of Souls. It is 4 white-white sorcery. Return all creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Each of them is a 1/1 spirit with flying in addition to its other types. Exile Storm of Souls. So this is a 6-mana sorcery that recurs all of your creatures. Reanimates all of your creatures from grave to the field. Yeah, that's just pretty strong. There hasn't really been a card quite like this where it's asymmetrically benefiting you. And this is just kind of a good example of how WotC is really starting to implement their changes to white for their color pie philosophy, where it's like, all right, white is starting to get all this card draw with a Wedding Ring. White is starting to become, like, I think number 1 or number 2 in reanimating, so it's not just black anymore. There are other cards that we kind of talked about earlier, where it's like, I don't know, it's just like, it seems like we're slowly starting to see all of the changes that WotC's been promising, and we have for like a number of sets, but this pre-con, and I don't want to go into each and every one of these, but a lot of these white cards in this pre-con embody those changes. They're not necessarily super strong, but it's like, hey, I notice it in the design of these cards.
Yeah, and that also kind of goes with this other card, Sudden Salvation. 2 white-white instant, choose up to 3 target permanent cards in graveyards that were put there from the graveyard this turn. Return them to the battlefield tapped under their owner's control. You draw a card for each opponent who controls one or more of those permanents. So this is kind of, I think, a very political card, too, that you can use and get some card advantage out of it, because you're not just only possibly either getting stuff back for you, you can like get one thing back for you, and then maybe like try and use it to get another thing back for your opponent, and maybe another opponent, so you just wrapped or something, be like, okay, I'm gonna wrap, but here I will also get back your best creature, and I'll choose that for you, and then you get to benefit from the card draw.
Right, and I think this also embodies, if I'm correct and remembering correctly, white getting the ability to recur just target permanent, not just like an artifact or an enchantment, but just like target permanent in general, which is pretty strong.
So I think that was actually it for terms of cards we wanted to talk about that were in the pre-con, aside from the legendary creatures. All the other cards are just kind of, I would say, like, very specific to the decks that they're trying to get them in. Like, you got some decent spirits for your spirit tribal deck. You got some, you know, decent vampires for your vampire deck, but, like, none of them are, like, you know, these are, like, okay decks to get. Feed the Swarm, I will say, did get a reprint in the vampire deck, which seems pretty good considering, like, that's a card that people should be picking up more of. 2 mana, destroy target creature, enchantment, and opponent controls. Like, yeah, that's pretty good.
It's pretty affordable, luckily.
Well, I guess foil copies are starting to get expensive.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, we didn't really talk about many planeswalkers or multicolor cards in the 99. That's because we didn't really find any to be all that relevant, to be honest. This set, similar to other sets, WotC collaborated with, like, whoever owns the Count Dracula IP, and there's, like, skins of Count Dracula instead of Sorin, and, you know, we got, like, Chandra and Kaya, but, like, we don't really care about lore, and their cards kind of suck.
Yeah, they're fine. They can kind of just go into, like, very specific decks that would want them, but they're just not general good stuff EDH cards.
And then, like, there's the black and white versions of most commanders and the continuation of black and white lands, which, you know, there's a million different versions of every single card these days, and it's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like them, yeah, you like them. If you don't, cool. You don't. Go have fun.
Right.
Be creative.
You're totally. All right. Well, I guess, Blake, did we talk about what do you think is the best card in this set?
Slug.
Well, okay, let's not include legendary creatures.
Damn it. Gotta think then for a sec.
I mean, my vote goes to Cemetery Gatekeeper, possibly by invitation only as well. I'd say those two are up there in best cards for me. Or just in general.
For me, it's either those or, like, Big Crab, Hullbreaker Horror.
Yep, okay, he's good too. I guess, like, didn't really talk about this in Midnight Hunt either, but we did get this new dual land cycle that actually isn't that bad. If you control 2 or more other lands, so likely in the later game, if you already have 2 lands, you can just play this, and it's, like, pretty much a dual land. And they have one for every color pair now, so I feel like these are almost staples in that sense. Like, for at least budget play. Yeah. Well, with that, I think we're going to tune out. So, thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a great night. If you want to listen to us, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere else that you listen to your podcasts. If you want to send us a question at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com. If you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. We thank you very much for listening. We hope you have a great night. Peace out.
Peace.